Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 65 of the Lesbian Book Club podcast. This month we have an interview with US author Hayley Cass, and you're not going to want to miss it. She's taken the lesbian world by storm this year, and her interview is coming up very shortly. But first, let's see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesbian and what's going on in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts, and topping the US as I record this on November the 29th is Hayley Cass, the subject of today's interview. How current am I? With her new book, When You Least Expect It. This one is the story of Caroline Parker, a divorce attorney who's unlucky in love, especially around Christmas time, having been dumped numerous times over the holidays. When she runs into Hannah Dalton on Christmas Eve, the straight wife of her rival attorney, she doesn't think that luck will change anytime soon. But as Caroline guides Hannah's divorce, they get closer and the line between client and personal start to blur. This one is going great guns for Hayley, who's had quite the 2020 with her first couple of books. She knows how to hit readers in the feels, that's for sure. Also doing well is my new book, Christmas in Mistletoe, so thank you so much if you've bought it or reviewed it or if you plan to read it. Future you, give yourself a treat. This one is the story of Fran, a music exec who's a Christmas Grinch, and Ruby, a dazzling folk singer. Now the pair have met in London when Fran tried to sign Ruby, but Ruby turned her down. It wasn't pretty. However, when the pair are thrown together to help with a Christmas festival in Mistletoe, where both their parents live, their relationship starts to thaw. But when old tensions boil up, can Fran and Ruby make the mistletoe magic stick? Hey, it's not easy to say that. Mistletoe magic stick. Piles of snow, mulled wine, twinkly lights, ladies falling in love on a Christmas tree farm. This is my ode to Christmas. It's a Hallmark Christmas romance with two female leads. They're not going to make it on screen, Hallmark. That's hopefully maybe in a few years' time, who knows. But you can read all about it. So I hope you give Christmas and Mistletoe a chance and enjoy. Max Ellendale has a new book out called Borrowed, and it too is bothering the charts. This one is book 10 in the 4-point series. Book 10. I remember when she had book 5 out, and that doesn't seem that long ago, but I mean, big up Max. This one deals with Maggie and Sally's story, and it sounds like a tearjerker, with Maggie getting devastating news and then reliving her military past and struggling to cope. It also sounds like the kind of book that I get asked for a lot, one that touches on the lives of an established couple and not just one just getting together. So if that sounds like your bag, check it out. I really enjoyed Heart and Stalker, which I think was book 5 in the 4-point series. Also having a second run up the charts, actually, is another author who I interviewed this year for this podcast. That is Melissa Lennart and her book, The Secret of Me and You. Or is it The Secret of You and Me? I think it's You and Me. Now, like Max, as I said, Melissa's been on this podcast this year, and her novel really is, it's a great book. It's up there for vying for my book of the year. It's the story of Nora, who comes back to town and to her first love, and Sophie, who seems to have everything, with a husband, a child, a career, standing in the community. But what she really, really wants, as the Spice Girls once said, is Nora. This is the story of prejudice driving wedges in people's lives, small town America, lovers driven apart, but that love never fading. It's a second chance romance to bury all other second chance romance. It's got all the feels. If you haven't read The Secret of You and Me, I really would urge you to do so. Finally, still doing well in the charts is A.L. Brooks with her new novel, A Heart to Trust. This one is an enemies to lovers office romance and is the story of Jenny and Olivia, the latter having a boyfriend, but it turns out she's not quite as straight as she seems. There's an epidemic of that in lesbian romance, isn't there? And thank goodness, because otherwise we'd all be out of a job. That's it for the chart roundup for November 2020. We have nearly completed level 11 of 2020. Only one more level to go, unless there's some kind of weird fright around the corner. But fingers crossed that's not true, because my goodness, hasn't this year been a very strange one, a very long one? Yes. But I, for one, am in the Christmas spirit because, well, I've just launched my festive romance, Christmas in Mistletoe. But also, I'm just a Christmas lover, as you'll know if you've listened to this podcast before. But this year obviously is very different because 2020 is a different year, with the pandemic still showing no signs of abating, even though we do have a vaccine in the works. So that is good news. Hurrah for good news. I'm taking it wherever I can find it. But obviously this year is going to be very different because no Christmas markets, no big gatherings, no big family meetups, none of that. So we're all gearing up for a very different Christmas. But thank goodness actually that we've got books and movies to see us through this time of year. And as I said, I've got my book out. Hayley Cass's book is a Christmas book. And there's quite a few new books out on the horizon and will be coming out in the next few weeks. There's also, of course, a bunch of stalwart Christmas books that I love, and I will be featuring them on the festive roundup that's going to happen in a couple of weeks, so look out for that. But as well as starting to read a few other festive books, I've definitely made a start on festive films. This weekend I watched Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, which is a brilliant over-the-top musical written by her. It's got rhinestones, sass, Dolly and Christine Baranski, so what's not to like? I also recently watched Happiest Season, the much anticipated movie from Clea DuVall and starring Kristen Stewart. And Clea DuVall and Kristen Stewart, that is a power pairing any day of the week. And I have to say, I really did like it, although calling it a romantic comedy is a stretch because it is heartbreaking and stressful to watch in equal measure. There are definitely moments of romance and moments of comedy, but it's very close to the bone. Every single queer person on the planet will be able to relate. But there is a HEA, and there's much needed lightness and sass provided by Dan Levy and Aubrey Plaza, as well as the leads of Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis. So overall, it's well done, and it's just fabulous to see some queer representation on screen. Shout out also to the Hallmark Christmas movie, The Christmas House, which featured the first gay kiss in a Hallmark Christmas film, and it was done really well. So as I say, if you're after some Christmas books, stay tuned. I will be putting out a festive roundup in 2 weeks' time, and I will be recommending some new ones and some classics, including Jerry Hill's Chasing a Brighter Blue, Jeanette Winston's Ode to Christmas and Christmas Recipes, and I will be reading a couple of new ones too. What else have I been up to? Well, not much really since we last spoke, because the UK has been on lockdown for the whole of November, so I've just been mainly sitting in my house or walking up and down the Thames or walking around our local park. But I've also obviously been prepping and launching Christmas in Mistletoe, so now that is out and I can breathe a sigh of relief, I'm just concentrating on getting all my ducks in a row, doing a lot of admin, the boring, unsexy stuff. But once that's all done, and December really hits, which is this week, my plan is to move on to my next book, which is already written and back from the editor. And it is book 7 in the London Romance series, and it's called Hot London Nights. Now, as I said, I finished writing this one in September, but then I put it on hold to get my Christmas book out the door. But now I can turn my attention all the way back around in a 360 swifty move. And back to Hot London Nights, and yeah, I'm excited to get back to it actually. If you're a reader of the London Romance series and you read Made in London book 6, you remember India from that book. This book 7, Hot London Nights, is about her and her search for love. In audiobook news, Before You Say I Do is out and doing well, so if you haven't listened to it yet, do give that a whirl. It's read by the wonderful Justine Eyre. Also, my summer book that I wrote with TB Markinson, One Golden Summer, is narrated and it is being processed, so it's nearly done. It's in moderation behind the scenes in Amazon, so we're hoping it'll be out by the end of the year on audiobook, but who knows? Amazon are backed up with a lot of audiobooks apparently, so we're at their mercy. But Before You Say I Do is there, so do give that a whirl. That's all from me. There's not a lot of lesfic news because, well, basically everybody's just beavering away, writing away. All the conferences are done and dusted. So, yeah, we're just going to wait and see what 2021 brings. So let's get on now with the interview with the wonderful Hayley Cass. Joining me today is US author Hayley Cass, author of Those Who Wait and its follow-up Forever in a Day. Hayley is a writer who's always attempting to be hard at work on her writing, but often gets distracted by her cat, friends, and funny videos on the internet. So welcome, Hayley.
Nice to be here.
That's great to have you. So how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Had a lovely COVID test, as you know, that's fun. So I'm sure some people hearing it will definitely enjoy that.
Yes. But as we were just saying off air, it came back negative. So it's already a good day.
It is. It's true. Already a celebration.
Yeah. So tell me what you can see from where you're sitting.
I'm sitting actually in my bedroom. So I can see my cat's bed and kitten tree and a ton of cat toys that are sprinkled around that he was playing with before I kicked him out. A whole bunch of bedding that I moved around because I was cleaning. Yeah.
Right. Good okay. And what's your cat called?
His name is Everything Bagel.
What's the story behind that?
Okay, well, there's just something about naming pets after food that is just, it just tickles me. Mm. So when I was coming up with names, potential names for a kitten, he was born about 4 or 5 months ago, and I was spitballing names with my friends, and I was just like, you know, I love breakfast names, and so I just kept saying random things, like as a joke mostly, like, oh, scrambled eggs, and then I said Everything Bagel, and I was like, you know what, I don't know, I think that's it, I really think I got it there.
And does he or she react to the full name, or just part of the name as well?
Mostly just Evie, which is what usually comes out, because it's so much easier.
I hope they're all right being out of the room, because a five-month-old kitten might be a bit springy.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty frisky. I can hear him outside running around.
So tell me a little bit about your writing journey, Hayley, and how you got started.
See, my writing journey, I guess, really started when I fell in love with reading, which was a rocky process for me back in the day, because when I was starting to learn to read and write, I had some really wonderful teachers who caught on to early signs of dyslexia. So I had some really intensive tutoring for that for several years. And I really hated reading and writing for a long time, but I eventually fell in love with the book series when I was younger. And that introduced me to the fact that stories could be told through writing the same way you can vocally tell them or watch them in a movie. And from there on, I wrote all the time. I used to like sit underneath my kitchen table and write for privacy, because that just made sense to me at the time, I guess. Then when I got older and was in college, I started writing fan fiction, and I just kept going from there.
And are you still sitting under kitchen tables, or have you progressed it above the kitchen table now?
Slightly above it. Now I sit at the table or a desk. Just slightly too tall now.
I don't know. You could give it a go, see what comes. The magic might still be there.
It's, you know, maybe when I get writer's block, I'll try it out.
Yeah. So you said you did a bit of fan fiction. So what were you writing fan fiction about?
Let's see. When I started writing fan fiction, I did Callie in Arizona from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, Until They Broke My Heart. And then some Rachel and Quinn from Glee. I've written for Alex and Maggie on Supergirl, and Those Who Wait was actually a fan fiction in its beginning days for Sansa and Margaery on Game of Thrones.
Ah, okay. Because I was wondering, I did see something that it was fan fiction to begin with. So I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones, so I can't comment on it. So let's get on to Those Who Wait. So I read it in preparation for this podcast, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was a truly emotional ride with all the feels, and may or may not be similar to characters in Game of Thrones. But I thought it had a great energy about the writing that kept me turning the pages. And it's a gorgeous story about politics, sexuality, falling in love, coming to terms with yourself. So tell me a little bit about the inspiration for writing it and the journey getting there.
Obviously, it did start as fan fiction. I have heard that generally, if people read it without knowing it was a fan fiction, even if they've seen Game of Thrones, I don't think anyone has ever recognized it, because it was a totally updated, modernized universe that I sort of created instead of writing it in a canon world.
Yeah.
But I was just really grabbed by these character archetypes. You know, one who is a woman who's very openly vulnerable, and that's what a lot of people see about her, but when you peel back her layers, she has a really strong inner strength and sense of who she is at the core of who she is. And then another one who's just entirely self-assured and at least thinks that she has it all figured out. And I just really love this idea of these two women who seem to be completely opposite and get thrown together entirely by chance, but are unable to let each other like really go.
Yeah, and I think I really love that about it, actually, because I think your two leads were Sutton and Charlotte, and they're very distinct, and they both went on a journey. But I loved that about Sutton, that she was very vulnerable. So she started out stumbling, but in the end was the brave one. And they say that every story is about one character. So whose story would you say this truly is? Sutton or Charlotte's?
Okay, I love this question. I thought about it before. I think saying that it's Sutton's story is my first instinct, because I don't want to say she's the easier answer, but in a manner of speaking, you know, like you said, she's very vulnerable, but in the end she grows and she undergoes a lot of external changes. Like, she's unsure of her place in the world, and in terms of confidence, of her love life and her professional life, the journey for her is clearly stronger than Charlotte's. But having said all that, I do ultimately think it would be Charlotte's story. You know, despite being confident in herself and her abilities and her ethics, her choices, I think who she is on a fundamental level changes in terms of as a human. I once described it as in an alternate universe, say, God forbid they never got back together at the end, Sutton would move on. She would always have, you know, a thing for Charlotte, and would feel her heart stop just that beat when she heard her name, and like would follow her on the news, but she would move on. But like, for Charlotte, this is it. I don't imagine she would ever fall for anyone ever again.
Oh, that's really interesting to hear you say that. I'm just trying to think, do I agree? I don't know, but it's like they say, isn't it? Once your story's out there, anyone can apply their own interpretation.
It's true.
Yeah, that, absolutely. So as you said, the story revolves around Charlotte and Sutton and their relationship, which very much starts out as a friends with benefits. But as we all know, what that happens to those relationships, especially in romance stories. So is friends to lovers a favourite trope of yours? Was it one you set out to write?
I'm going to be honest. I always really thought of like enemies to lovers as more of a favourite trope of mine. But once, you know, I had gotten this question, I was like, maybe friends to lovers really is my favorite trope.
Yeah.
I really started thinking about it, because I do love like a rivals to lovers story, but I think my favorite part of that is like a rivals to friends to lovers. I guess I reveal myself through my writing, but I love a long book with a lot of development between the characters, and just seeing two people really fall in love and have feelings maybe before they even realize it themselves. And I think a big part of that comes from being at least friendly with someone first.
Have you written a enemies to lovers?
I attempted one for several years ago in a fan fiction for Grey's Anatomy. It sort of was, but no, I think they became friends first.
See, I just wondered, because I try to write enemies to lovers and I fail all the time. They're always just like,
yeah,
you know, flirting.
No, I can't do it.
Yeah. You know, I'd love to be able to write it, and I bow down to the people that can, but yeah, I just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Feel the same way.
Okay. So in the book, Charlotte is the granddaughter of a recent female president from a very glitzy political family, and Sutton's also from a political family. So what sort of research did you have to do for the book in terms of researching those worlds?
Oh, Google is truly my best friend that I've ever had. Sorry to my actual best friend if she does listen to this. That was probably definitely the hardest thing about adapting this from a fan fiction to a novel, because in the original form, I got to create my own political world, and whatever I needed to fit, I would just plug in and be like, well, that's the way it is in this system. So when I adapted it, it was a lot of Googling and going through Wikipedia, and then from there to their source articles of what happens in case of this special election, or what is happening on this date? Does it have to happen now? And just a lot of figuring in what actually can fit with these characters was a struggle. Mm. Yeah, it was definitely a lot of reading political articles, and thank God it was not during this current political climate, because I couldn't do that recreationally right now.
No, that would be a hard ask. So yeah. When was it that you wrote this?
Primarily wrote it in 2017, I want to say. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Trump was in then, but it wasn't as but it wasn't 2020. And as we all know, 2020 is quite the year. And did it, so it was all like done by Googling and Wikipedia. You didn't, did you speak to people as well, or was it just like researching articles and stuff like that?
It was just a lot of research, yeah.
Okay. So you really grabbed hold of Reese's emotions, as I said, including mine. Didn't let go. And even though I knew it had to be a HEA or a happy for now at least, the last 15% after the inevitable breakup were edge of the seat stuff. So how easy or hard was that to pull off?
Well, luckily, writing angst is my favorite thing.
Okay.
The breakups and, you know, the moments where, like, the raw truth comes out and characters are confronted with the things that they don't want to think about, or they have to face what keeps them up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the moments where characters are at their lowest with their inner strength and their support systems are really the things that keep them going. I just love those moments. And I always write from an outline. So the angsty moments, the end, really, the breakups and the aftermath, it's always one of the first things that I have in my outline because I'm always like, I'm ready with those.
And I think it really does come through, actually, because I thought you did those moments really, really well. Do you write them first, or do you write in order? Out of order or in order?
I would say, I guess, sort of both, because I do write my, I attempt to write my entire outline before I write the actual story. The outline is, at some points, you know, oh, here, something has to happen that can cause the next part. But then in some parts, it'll be like 6 pages, because when I'm writing it, I'll be like, oh, I can see it right now. I just got to write it right now. So mm-hmm. I'll copy and paste that entire thing in eventually when I'm writing that chapter, and then just like go through and edit it and add what I need to add.
Yeah. Okay. And also, I thought it was a great balance of sort of romance acts and sex scenes as well. There were a host of sex scenes throughout, all very well done, all different in their own way. So how did you find writing those, and do you have tips for doing them well?
Writing sex scenes for me is really, in a way, the same as everything else, in terms of I can usually picture the plot playing out in my head as I write, and then I just try to describe what I'm picturing in my head. It's different in that mostly when I'm writing, I'm trying to focus on the emotion or, you know, the twisty things inside of someone. But during the sex scenes, I do that, but then I will go back and be like, no, wait, you need the physical things too here. That's important. So in a way, clinical, like when actors describe sex scenes, like an interviewer will be like, oh, that was really sensual. Did you feel that when you were filming it? And the actor will be like, no, it was just really cold in there and we were really professional and focused. So I sort of feel like that, where it's like I'm thinking it and I'm picturing it and I'm like, but where is Charlotte's hand? What is happening right now? Yeah.
Get the tape measure out, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And can I just say, when I was reading that the sex scene in the museum, I was just like, oh no. I was just like, I had my hand over my eyes, like, no, really? Really? And you also had a host of supporting characters in this one, a real smorgasbord from friends and family and work colleagues. And I really enjoyed them too, particularly Reagan. I liked how you made her very combative. So did you enjoy writing those supporting roles too, and did you have a favourite?
Oh, I loved writing side characters and those who wait. I think especially because Sutton and Charlotte are both very social, and a lot of who they are, I think, is a reflection of who they surround themselves with. So I enjoy seeing that dynamic play out as I'm writing it. And Regan's definitely my favourite. She might be my favourite character in the novel itself.
Okay, just for those sort of reasons.
I think she fills a role that's in a lot of romance novels of, you know, like the best character who's straight talking. I enjoyed the way that she approaches the world herself in sort of a fearless way that I think understands Sutton on a level that Sutton sometimes doesn't even understand herself. And I know this technically isn't in the book, but I have Regan's entire life story and background planned out in my head that I would pull on to influence why I'm writing certain things that she's saying, or like where she's coming from. I just enjoy her dynamic with Sutton of like, I'm a friend who's going to push you into doing these things, and I am brash and opinionated, and I'm going to say what's on my mind, but at the end of the day, you are still my main priority as my best friend. It just rang true for me for like a lot of my own friendships. I love her.
Cool. And is Reagan going to be the star of a future novel?
I have a plan for her. When it would be written, I don't know. But she and Emma, in my mind, and in the follow-up of Those Who Wait, are a couple. Yeah.
Yes, because I did see that a few reviews were asking for that. So I thought, I wonder if you will.
I wonder if I will too.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what we're all going to be doing next year, right?
Exactly.
So this is your debut novel, and readers have responded to it so well. I couldn't, you know, let it go by. I really wanted to chat with you about it. So how long did it take you to write, and what were your hopes for it, and have they been exceeded?
It definitely took me a while to write, maybe a year or so, because I would stop and go and write some other stories in the middle of writing this, whenever I felt like, oh, that was a really heavy chapter, I'm going to take a break from this and write something else. So it took me a while, and I didn't really intend to publish it at all as a novel until a few people who had read it were like, you know, I read a lot of lesfic, and this could be a good story. And I was like, no, it can't. There's no way it would do that well. Yeah, my biggest hope for writing it as a fan fiction and then publishing it was just to try to make people feel what I was feeling when I wrote it and like resonate with people. And I had a lot of anxieties about that when I was deciding to go through with publishing, and I was like, are people gonna like it? Are they gonna trash it? Should this have stayed a fan fiction forever? But I'm just really blown away by the reception. I had no idea it would become what it became.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been one of those perennials in the charts this year, hasn't it?
I'm so thankful. Like, it really does blow me away.
Truly deserved. And as we said before, it's a long read, 180,000 words. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, wow. My novels are normally 70 to 80, so it's two and a half of my novels. But I didn't, you know, it didn't feel like it dragged crazily anywhere. So what made you decide to make it that length? Because that is like really, really long.
Believe it or not, in its original form, it was about 300,000 words.
Oh my God.
And I knew when I was publishing it, I was like, well, it has to be shorter than that. So my goal was really to get it under 200,000 when I was editing it.
Yeah.
When I got to like 190, I was like, you know, keep going. Yeah, and in general, I know that I sort of have an issue with writing a lot of things because I'm very wordy. So, yeah.
So your next book, your second novel, right, is coming out next month in November, called When You Least Expect It. So how long's that?
That one is clocking in at around 60,000. I can't call it a novella at this point. However, that was what it was intended to be. I realized once it hit over 40,000 words, I was like, I guess you can't call it that anymore.
You love the words. You just can't get enough of them. So that's it, right?
I really do. Yeah. That's a problem.
You know, and as we said, from the reaction to the book, other people do quite like a longer book as well. So, you know, it hasn't hindered it, has it?
Thank God for that.
So, as we said, your second novel, When You Least Expect It. So that is 60,000 words, which is a good length for a novel. So what can readers expect? More glitz and glamour, or is it something different?
It's an entirely different beast from Those Who Wait. Because of the way I started writing it, in terms of style, it's different. I really, like I said, really intended it to be a novella because my friend was like, you can't write a love story in under 30,000 words. And I was like, I totally can. And failed. So stylistically, it's not as told, you know, as precisely chapter to chapter. It's told in a lot of small parts, I guess you would like little vignettes of time, because an entire year passes through like the holidays as we go through the year. And definitely less glitz and glamour. Both Caroline and Hannah, my new characters, live an average everyday life. They're just people you could know. One's a lawyer, one is working her way through going back to school as an adult.
Okay, great. So when's that due out?
November 20th.
November 20th. Okay, so I think that this podcast is going to be out in November, so hopefully around the same time it's out. And are you feeling the pressure knowing how well your first book was received, or are you just trying to be calm and zen about it?
I'm definitely trying to be calm and zen about it. Yeah, I'm definitely feeling a little bit of pressure after seeing the success from Those Who Wait, which is, you know, I'm really thrilled and honored that it was so well received. But there's this little voice that lives in the back of my head that's like, your second book better be just as good.
I think you've got a lot of readers really anticipating this new release. So that's all you can ask for, really, isn't it?
I guess so. You know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So are you a full-time writer?
Oh, no, unfortunately not. I'm a counselor at a facility for people with severe mental illness, but I work the third shift most of the time. So I can usually do on a quiet night a bit of writing while I'm at work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you fit in writing when you're not working and while you're at work a little bit as well. What's your average speed for a book then, do you think? I mean, how long did the second book take you to write?
Let's see, when I'm feeling inspired, I think I wrote the first 40,000 words in like 3 weeks. And then, yeah, so when an idea hits me, I'm like, I need to get on there and write it right now.
Yeah.
And then once I'm towards like the parts that I don't have as well planned in my outline, I sort of dip a little bit, but I make myself write a little bit every day of like, you need to do this.
That's discipline. And when you're writing, do you have word counts, or do you just think, no, I'll just get a little bit done?
I will try to have word counts. You know, I'll try to be like, you need to get at least 2,000 words done today. I wouldn't say that it's super disciplined, because sometimes if I'm just not feeling it, I'll be like, you know what? The 800 words I have has to be it for right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force it. And yeah, so sometimes I just have to put it away and be like, you'll look at this later.
Okay. And what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
I think it's probably that, for me, endings are natural. And if your story isn't coming to a natural end, then maybe it's not the right end. My fiction writing professor in undergrad said this once, like, and it's clearly stuck with me. You know, even when I'm ending a chapter or a certain segment, sometimes I'll get stuck on how to proceed and what should come next. And if nothing's coming to my mind and I just can't figure it out, I'm like, well, I need to go back and change what I last wrote, because it's clearly not the right ending for me.
I like that. I've never heard that piece of advice, but I guess it probably is true. And you said there that you did creative writing as undergrad. So that was part of your degree or fully your degree?
English is my undergrad degree, yes.
Okay.
So you just... focus on writing, yeah.
Ah, okay. Cool. And did you do any postgraduate on it as well? I just wonder if Sutton's time as a TA was relevant to you.
It is, yeah. I have a master's in English education that I'm clearly not using.
Okay.
But I did it.
There's still time.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see how it goes.
So you've got... the next book, when you least expect it, is out this month, when the podcast is out in November. And what are your publishing plans for next year? Do you have anything on scheduled yet?
Not a precise date. Once this is completely done and I'm finished looking at When You Least Expect It, I will go back to working on Truth Be Told, which is a celebrity fomance that I have a few chapters done for, and hopefully that will be published in the first half of the year. And then I have two strong contenders for my book to work on after that, but I couldn't say what it would be to focus on next at this point.
Okay, but you've got a lot of projects and in the works.
Yes.
Okay, and the final question that I ask everyone that comes on this podcast, if you could be the love child of two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
This stuck with me for so long to try to think of the perfect thing. But then I was like, you know, I just have to go with my first instincts. So first of all, I'm going to say Daniel Handler or Lemony Snicket,
mm-hmm.
because he introduced me to books, and his style of writing was what made me really fall in love with reading. And I just think it's so impressive the way he tied in things that are both hilarious and profound into a book series for children that I find still meaningful even when I look back on it as an adult. And classically, Harper Lee, I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird is probably the only book I've ever been assigned to read that I've gone back to continue reading in adulthood. The progressive writing of the time and like how heartfelt it is, and the characterizations with the gender norms of the time, you know, the 1930s in the South, I just can't beat it. And then to write one of the most influential books of all time and then be like, you know what, I'm going to live a life of total solitude is just so metal. I can't imagine.
Did you read the latest one or not?
I did not yet. It is in my Kindle because I'm a terrible person.
I won't let her know. Your mum, she's your mum and everything.
It's so true, don't tell her.
Yeah,
I mean, gosh. A little hard now. But yeah.
Well, no, I think that's a really good and interesting mashup there. So brilliant. All right, well, thank you so much, Hayley. This has been great, and it's been great to find out the writer behind Those Who Wait, and great to find out your future plans as well.
No, thank you so much for having me. I was honestly so thrilled when you asked.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. If you'd like to find out more about me and my books, just head on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on any of the stores. Most of my books are available wide on Amazon Kindle, Apple, Kobo, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Ilva Publishing, Bella Books, and wherever good audiobook, ebooks, and print books are sold. You can even pop into your local bookshop and order most of my print books direct from them. Support your local bookshop. If you'd like to sign up to my VIP Readers Club, you can do so at clairelydon.co.uk and get yourself a copy of It Had to Be You, my Christmas romance novella. And join me in a couple of weeks when I'll be doing the 2020 festive roundup, where I'll be interviewing 6 or 7 other lesbian authors, asking them what they're hoping for from Santa, what their book of the year's been, what their favourite Christmas lesbian is. It's going to be great, and I will also be doing a lesbian Christmas book roundup. So join me then. In the meantime, have a great week.